Hi, everyone. This is Alien Talk Podcast, a program where we discuss all things about aliens and UFOs, and where we always push the limits of our understanding. We are Joe Landry and Lori Olford, here with you again for another exciting episode where we explore the wondrous subjects that pertain to extraterrestrials, the paranormal, and the mysterious. So we welcome you and we thank you all for joining us. As always, we're really glad to have you here. So, hey, Lori, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Joe. And we're going to jump right into our discussion today. So today we have the distinct pleasure of being joined by a special guest to share in our revisitation of the whole ancient astronaut theory and what it is about and that, you know, compels us to re-examine not only our understanding of mythology, but also our own religious beliefs about the Bible and even to challenge our personal faith. And so we ask, you know, why do we ponder it the way that we do? What is it about the stars and the idea of life existing elsewhere in the universe that, you know, fascinates us so much?
Right. The question comes down to why we wonder about aliens in the first place. What draws us to stories about UFOs and aliens visiting us, not only in the present time, but particularly to our ancestors in the distant past? We've talked in length about the ancient astronaut theory here on the show and have looked at comparative mythology to help show that the idea of a deity, either as a pantheon of gods or as God with a capital G, is on a continuum, a persistent story that goes back to the dawn of human civilization and that repeats itself again and again. That story is that we come from something, from somewhere out there. And all of us, whether we admit to it or not, are obsessed with finding out more. So Laurie, our guest today, joins us, as we like to say, from across the pond over in the United Kingdom, where we actually have over 8,000 listeners right now. And it seems from what I've read about him that he's quite accomplished in his career. And Laurie, still there? So Laurie, I was like we lost the connection here. So
I'm back, Joe.
Okay, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, just to let everybody know, Aaron is in England, and so we're probably going to have these issues.
But we're in Arizona, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, Joe and I are very excited to have with us on the show today Aaron Long, who now runs his own Ancient Astronaut Theory Facebook page, and he covers a lot of issues, and he is quite well versed in this subject matter. He is also currently involved in filmmaking and has even landed a few acting roles, such as in the 2012 movie called The Last Road. And on top of that, he was a professional wrestler, I believe.
That's right, guys. Do you want me to elaborate?
Yeah, he was just saying that you were a professional wrestler before you got into the film industry. So it is truly a privilege to have you here with us, Aaron, to discuss all the things about aliens and UFOs. So hello and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Laurie. It's an absolute honor and pleasure to be on with you guys. So, the pleasure is all mine, so thank you.
So, Aaron, please begin by telling all of us about your background and about what got you involved in the ancient astronaut theory, which, you know, as we all know, is the contemporary position in scientific and historical debate that the gods, the monsters, the heroes, and all the spectacles mentioned today throughout the world's religions and mythologies are actually just transformed manifestations of stories about encounters in the remote past with extraterrestrials and their superior technology. Now, I know you've talked about how you were influenced by Russian geologist Dr. Alexander Koltepin, who did a good bit of research on this subject as found in one of his books titled The Disappeared Inhabitants of the Earth. So go ahead and tell us all about that.
Absolutely, Laurie. Yeah. So let's take a step back a little bit. So thanks to my dad that I'm in this field of research. I went to Catholic school, obviously primary school when I was younger, and religion was around me, you know, pretty much 24/7. You know, my nan, bless her soul, you know, she was a devout Jehovah's Witness. I've always been around religion. And obviously in class, in RE classes, I always came away from the classes with more questions than I did answers. And even as a child, I would always question what I'd been taught that day, so to speak. And that's kind of stuck with me as I grew up. And it was my dad who said to me, you know, have you heard of an author called Eric von Daniken? He wrote a book called Chariots of the Gods. And at the time, I hadn't heard of him. I hadn't researched the ancient astronaut theory. So I went out and bought the book and devoured it within literally 3 to 4 hours. And I couldn't get enough of it. The more I read, the more things were. And it just snowballed from there, really. So, yeah.
But so, do you think you were also influenced by, say, other proponents like Giorgio Tsoukalos, Nick Pope, David Childress, and Linda Moulton Howe? Because, I mean, I'm sure you've watched the Ancient Alien TV series where, you know, these guys are regular, they have regular attendances on there. I'm sure they've possibly influenced you as well, huh?
Yeah. They have influenced me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I met Giorgio back June this year at the Awakening Conference in Blackpool, England. And, some real great personalities there. And obviously I know Linda Moulton Howe and her research. But it was, like I said, it was mainly Eric von Daniken that really led me on my search. Dr. Alexander Koltypin, the geologist in Russia, he's really blew my mind. I mean, you know, some of his findings are really, really, they're game changers, you know?
I didn't mean to cut you off there because of the old connection thing, I guess. But so when we consider the works of some of well-known authors on the subject, such as, you know, Zechariah Sitchin, Eric von Daniken, you know, Graham Hancock, and even Robert Chereau, we find compelling reasons to believe that aliens have visited humanity in the distant past. And I mean, we don't have absolute proof, but we do have, you know, some facts that reasonably support the idea. Now, Joe, you and I have spent a good bit of time on several episodes explaining out the biblical narrative, such as with a, you know, fire.
Right. You were saying with the biblical narrative, you know, a fiery cloud, what we were talking before, descends upon a mountain for all the Israelites to see. There is also the wheel within a wheel, you know, the vision by Ezekiel.
Is it the Mesopotamian cuneiform recounting of?
Hey, Lori, we lost your connection there. You were saying that, we're asking Aaron, what facts do you find to be most credibly compelling for the ancient astronaut theory? I mean, is it, you know, the Mesopotamian cuneiform about the Anunnaki, or is it other ancient texts that mention gods in the sky, or is it possibly like the mystery of the megalithic monuments like Stonehenge or the Giza pyramids? What are your thoughts? What do you think is the most compelling piece of evidence for the ancient astronaut theory?
Okay, well, I'm glad you asked me this question, because first and foremost, the evidence is staring us right in the face. No matter where you go in the world, there's megalithic structures, megalithic monuments that defy what a lot of the time what we can do today with modern technology. And we're told by, you know, the experts, you know, the archaeologists, the scientists, that, you know, this was done using chisels, pulleys, slaves, and it's just insanity. It's preposterous to even, you know, think that it was achieved you know using these primitive tools. I've spoke to engineers who have looked at a lot of these megalithic sites, and they've said, you know, it'd be tough for them to do it today. The precision cuts, the bore holes that we see in places like Puma Punku in Bolivia, we even see them in Egypt that the tour guides like to bypass, you know. I've got a friend over in Egypt that keeps inviting me over. I've not had the chance to go over yet, but there's a lot of places that the tour guides like to bypass, especially in Egypt. There's places in the UK where, like, you know, we've got the megalithic dolmens where, you know, you've got 250-ton capstones just resting at top. Like the pillars, and it's like they were just placed there like Lego bricks. And, you know, when you look at these dolmens and structures, it just baffles the mind. you know, how they were done using the methods that were being pulled. Regarding Zakharov Sitchin, I can really, really delve deep into that if we have time tonight. Regarding Alalu, I mean, everyone speaks about Enki and Enlil, but they don't speak about Alalu, the first to touch down on Earth.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the most remarkable features about ancient history, and especially what's found in the scriptures that gives credence to the ancient astronaut theory, is the account of the Nephilim from Genesis chapter 6, and how it ties in with the narrative that comes from the Book of Enoch about the sons of God mating with the daughters of men. This could very well be the basis for the oral traditions about giants existing at all, and it could be a valid argument to support the notion of an extraterrestrial presence on Earth back in biblical times. So, you know, the Bible is the number one bestseller of all time, and maybe that says something about our innate longing to learn and to connect with what our ancestors experienced. And, you know, another thing, as it is, Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung, the two famous psychologists, actually did believe in a sort of built-in archetypal subconscious inherited memory that we all carry with us. Freud talked about it in his work Totem and Taboo. Jung went into it in his work Man and the Symbols. And while Freud and Jung don't directly refer to alien creatures, they more or less support the idea that people are born to believe in gods, and God with a capital G, because of these stories being passed, are intrinsically woven into our psyche. So, Aaron, do you think that the very mention of angels and sons of God gives a historical portrayal of ancient aliens in a way that is logical, reliable, accurate, and consistent throughout the cultures of all the world?
Absolutely. I mean, we're good with the King James Bible just to start with. No matter what Bible you actually read, is littered with extraterrestrial contact. No matter if you read the Book of Ezekiel, the burning bush of Moses, the 40-year Exodus of the Israelites. I can go deep into that as well with the food source that they had at the time, which was called manna. I don't know if you've there's a really fascinating book by Rodney Dell and George Sassoon, and it's called The Manna Machine. And I paid a lot of money for this book. It's quite a rare book, and they're two engineers and scientists, and they put together by reading these accounts that the Israelites actually had a machine that was supplied to them by a pillar of cloud by day and a burning fire by night. I think a fire by night and a pillar of cloud by day. And they were supplied this food source called manna, which kept them going for 40 years in the Sinai desert. It was ingested. In the end, they were complaining that they didn't want it anymore. It was bad food. Obviously, if you ate the same meal every single day for 40 years, you'd complain too, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, and that's exactly what the Israelites did. But in the end, they started making it into a biscuit, into what we would call today a cookie, right? And it sustained them for 40 years, but the reason we have Sabbath Sunday is because on that day, the machine had to be cleaned. This pillar of cloud by day and fire by night instructed them to clean this manna machine on Sunday, which was, the day of rest, which we call today.
All of that information, it just does not sound like the traditional stories that we have of the gigantic unseen being in the sky, that spiritual being. This is definitely something that's of flesh and blood that's absolutely hanging out up above in the sky, looking down on the Israelites. So, Aaron, I've read some comments on your posts and see how, some people are so adamant that you are wrong, but, they say that with not a shred of evidence to even support their claims, of course. And I had to comment on one about the giants because, people claim the giants never existed. And, they say that a 7-foot human would appear gigantic to someone with a height of 5'7". However, they seem to overlook cases like.
Right. You were saying that they overlooked the cases like Robert Wadlow and John Rogan, who lived less than 100 years ago. And these guys were almost 9 feet tall. So there is proof of humans being extraordinarily and exceptionally tall.
From what mainstream archaeologists put forth.
We lost your connection there again, Lori. I was just asking Aaron if what he thinks about other possibilities. Aaron, what is your take on what people say who don't want to accept any other possibility other than what the mainstream archaeologists put forth?
Yeah, so my answer to that would be, and going back to what Joe said, you know, about the comments he's read on the page, without a single shred of evidence, and that's 100% true. I mean, of course, you know, in this type of field, you've got to open up to being attacked, right? It's just the nature of the game. But the fact is that they're attacking me, or you know, and many people in my position that are in this field of research, they attack you because they're frightened of what they don't know, and you know it's easier just to how do I explain it? Just go along with the narrative we've been fed, right?
Because and
a lot of people are so devout to their religion, whatever it may be, respectively as well, because you know I have a lot of faith, so I'm completely with them on that. But you have to you know the longer you deny any other possibility, the more you remain stagnant. You just have to open your mind, because it's right in front of us. The evidence is right in front of us with all ancient texts, from the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the Sumerian cuneiform text, the Enuma Elish. The list goes on, and they all speak of sky gods descending from the sky. And Jesus himself said, you know, I am not of this world. My Father's house has many mansions. I mean, is he referring to many planets? He's telling you he's not earthly, you know, he's not from Earth. And
that's a very good illustration there.
You know, so I mean, you look into cuneiform texts. I mean, a lot, like going back to what I said about Enki and Enlil, you know, a lot of researchers are speaking about Enki and, you know, obviously how he was our creator in the Eden, which is clearly the Eden, right? But they don't speak of Alalu, and Alalu was allegedly the first to touch down on Earth over 450,000 years ago. And I mean, I can go on. I don't want to, you know, take up too much of your time, but you know, he speaks of the snow-capped mountains, how he enters Earth's atmosphere, and he sees the snow-hued mountains, and how he lands on Earth, and he's, you know, sat in his celestial skyship for hours and hours, and you know, looking at the sunset, looking at the sunrise, and distinguishing our cycles and seeing if it's safe to literally get out of his celestial chariot, as he called it,
right?
Tested the waters with some sort of rod that he described, and a lot of the depictions, Sumerian depictions on cylinder sills, you see them with these rods.
So Aaron, I want to ask you, go ahead, Laurie.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, that a good explanation of Alalu is in that Zachariah Sitchin book, The Lost Book of Enki.
And that's correct.
He tells a lot of, he gives a lot of information about exactly what you just said, and I think Alalu is also believed to be possibly the monument on Mars, that the face of Mars is where Alalu is supposed to be buried.
Absolutely, yeah, the face of Mars. I mean, Alalu was taken to Mars by Anu, and let me get this right. And the pilot was Absu, I believe, the pilot. Anu was on the ship, Enki and Enlil's father, right? And Alalu was put onto Mars and was told that he has to, you know, he's going to perish on Mars.
Yeah,
and it was the pilot, Absu or Alazu, I forgive me if I've got his name wrong, is around those lines. And he said that he was, you know, he will stay with Alalu until he dies. And, you know, he would give him a good burial. allegedly that's what the face on Mars in the region of Cydonia is.
And so, Aaron, let me ask you this. Do you have any instances in which you have witnessed the UFO or had some kind of a sighting of a paranormal kind?
Not personally, Laurie, no. I've seen lights in the sky that I can't explain. I would say unconventional. I haven't seen a solid craft, so to speak.
Yeah, I haven't either. I have never seen a UFO myself. I know other people. Laura, you said you've seen them more than once. I haven't.
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole theoretical framework to this, you know, it gets a little dicey when we start identifying the mythological gods, you know, like Zeus and Anu and Alau and Osiris as being aliens. Okay. And of course, even more so when we start hinting that Yahweh, Jesus, God with a capital G, is the fabrication of ancient writers coming from older sources of oral tradition that tell of extraterrestrial contacts. Nori, I think you would agree with me that in our experiences, religious people usually don't give a favorable consideration to that. It just goes too much against their dogma, their orthodoxy, especially when you start putting forth the hypothesis that extraterrestrials have something to do with our creation. Yet we do see an overall increase in people's interest in this notion of ancient aliens. So, Aaron, do you think your friends and family respond to the content of your Facebook page in a mostly positive way, or do they? I think you mentioned that they kind of do attack you, but they accuse you of blasphemy.
I mean, regarding my personal family, I'm very, very lucky, as in they're very open-minded. You know, they're very open to all kinds of unexplained phenomena. They're open to the ancient astronaut theory. They're not believers, and they're non-believers. Does that make sense? They're in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
They keep an open mind. But yeah, as in, you know, regarding friends, there's a lot of people that I know that, you know, do believe that we have been visited in our remote past and continue to be. And there's a lot of people that don't believe it. So, you know, it really depends on who you talk to, really.
So I remember watching a 1970 documentary film called Chariots of the Gods, and it's based off of the, you know, the book of the same title by Eric Don Vanagon, which you've read, I'm sure. And we brought this up a couple of episodes ago with aliens and dinosaurs. But in that documentary, there were two relics that were shown to have been discovered in Uzbekistan. And no one can explain them. Now, one was the skull of a 40,000-year-old bison with a hole in the middle of its forehead. The forensics experts determined that it was killed by a high-speed projectile, like a bullet from a gun. Of course, the question is, you know, what lethal bullets were being shot 40,000 years ago? The other thing they found was a petroglyph showing what seems, you know, strangely like a ancient astronaut standing in a full spacesuit and a flying saucer above it with you know, beam shooting down from it. From a modern-day perspective, there is no question as to what this is. Now, Aaron, in regard to the ancient astronaut theory in general, well, I mean, what do you think is the most irrefutable piece of evidence that, you know, supports it?
I'm going to have to go with the Great Pyramids of Giza.
Yeah.
If I could elaborate on that for about 5 minutes, am I okay for that, guys?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So if we look at the Pyramids of Giza, we link them up to the cuneiform texts of ancient Sumeria. If I could read you a quote from the translation of Zachariah Sitchin, if that's right, guys, and I want to see if you think the same as I do.
Okay.
And this comes from Ningishida, who was the deity of vegetation and the underworld. And the quote is this: "House that is like a mountain, house with a pointed peak. For heaven, earth is equipped. The handiwork of the Anunnaki it is. House bright and dark, house of heaven and earth. For the celestial boats it was put together by the Anunnaki built. House whose interior with a reddish light of heaven glows. A pulsating beam that far and high reaches it emits. Lofty mountain of mountains, great lofty fashion beyond the understanding of earthlings it is. House of equipment, lofty house of eternity. Its foundations, stones, the water's touch. Its great circumference in clay set. House whose parts are skillfully together woven. The great ones who in the sky circle to arrest and make descent. House that for the rocket ships is a landmark with unfathomable insides by Anu himself is the Ekker blessed. So are we talking about Ninga Shida being the architects of the pyramids here?
Yeah, Laurie, we both read Zachariah Sitchin's books, and we kind of get the same. It just, you know, is that they're referenced. About, oh, go ahead, Laurie. That was,
yeah. We go into a lot of detail explaining the Pyramid of Giza, and I think we bring something like what you just mentioned up in that episode. So. Now, Joe and I both enjoy analyzing, you know, mythology and the literary elements that comprise it. You know, things like Odin's ravens, Zeus's lightning bolts, Loki's shape-shifting ability, Gilgamesh's journey, and, you know, so many more things like that. And what we always find most amazing is that the gods, or the God of the Bible, as, you know, sacrilegious as that may be, do indeed seem to come across like extraterrestrials. And some scholars believe that these structural themes and symbols to the stories may hold some deeper truth in the way of allegorical importance, and that they may be linked to other traditions like that of the lost civilization of Atlantis. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it is possible that these legends reveal something encrypted about humanity's past that has some, you know, connection with an extraterrestrial race of beings? And, you know, could that story of Atlantis, like, have something to do with that?
Is that a question to me, Joe? Yeah.
Yes.
Ah, right. Yeah. Sorry. I don't know if he was asking Laurie a question. Yeah. So if we go back to the Yorick's skull, which was, you say 40,000 years ago, right?
Yeah.
The suggested bullet hole. So I don't know if you've read a book by Peter Colosimo called Not of This World. It's a fantastic little gem. And he had a case in there of the Yorick skull. A Yorick was, you know, like an ancient bull, right? That's now extinct. And they found like a projectile hole through the skull of this Yorick. And I read the case in that book. And it suggests to me that we have had an advanced, or should I say countless advanced civilizations on this planet, not thousands of years ago, but millions of years ago. I mean, we only have a 5,000 year timeline on a planet that's allegedly 4.5 billion years old, right?
Right.
And they're trying to tell us that nothing happened on the Earth, you know, before 5,000 years ago is absolutely ludicrous. You know, the oxygen levels were a lot higher than they were today. The air was cleaner. The air was fresher. The fauna was massive. The flora was, you know, gigantic. The earth was once covered in mushrooms as opposed to trees. And we see evidence of that in Africa. Places like Africa, we see, you know, petrified mushrooms that are the size of like two houses. So the earth was a very, very mystical place millions of years ago. And you know, this conversation could be down to finding Dr. Alexander Koltypin, who looked at the alleged, what we're told, are cart ruts right in Malta that go underneath the sea. And, you know, as a 30-year geologist, he said he's looking at vehicle tracks. They're not cart ruts, they're vehicle tracks. And they're from the Neogene period, which is, we're going back 300 million years ago now. And, of course, you know, of course he's been laughed at. But we've got a geologist here of over, like I said, 30 years telling people that these are vehicle tracks. And he even, you know, drove vehicles onto wet mud. And they're identical to what we're seeing in places like Malta and Turkey. So
you know, when you consider that the Anunnaki of Sumerian mythology could be metaphorical to the oral traditions of ancient aliens, you have to wonder if they are not also one and the same as the fabled Atlanteans, you know, with the description given about them by Plato as being this a society greater and seemingly more advanced than any other on Earth. Now, this leads us to wonder about Antarctica. Now, there have been many mysterious things going on there, such as reports of UFOs attacking U.S. Navy ships back in the 1940s. Supposedly before World War II, British intelligence believed that the Nazis had secret bases there whose purpose wasn't entirely clear, but they were rumored to have been secret tunnels underneath the ice in which extraterrestrial artifacts were recovered. So you can't help but wonder if Antarctica has something to do with the Lost Atlantis, and if Lost Atlantis has something to do with ancient aliens. What are your thoughts on that, Aaron?
Yeah, so there's a number of things I want to add to Antarctica, and it's very interesting. We've got so much to explore regarding Antarctica. I mean, obviously, you and Joe are aware of the Peary map, right, by Admiral Peary Reese. Yeah, and it's one of the most compelling pieces of evidence of a lost advanced civilization, as Graham Hancock so rightfully, rightfully described. Here we have a map which was given to us by Sir Admiral Peary Reese, and you know, this map shows Antarctica's landmass free of ice, which was, we're going back before, 11,300 years ago. I mean, who were the cartographers that gave us a map with Antarctica with no ice sheet? So, you know, something or someone must have had capability of flight to give us that map in the first place. So, you know, straight off the bat, we're going back 11,300 years before the last ice age, right?
Right.
Sorry, Joe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's Lori. No, just finish up what you need to say there. I didn't mean to cut in.
That's right. And then we got the obviously what influenced the famous film Journey to the Center of the Earth. We had Admiral Byrd, who allegedly flew through Antarctica and described an underground city full of full of extraterrestrial races that were living beneath the ice sheets of Antarctica, and this came from Admiral Byrd. So
yeah, and that's where a lot of people believe too, that that's where the reptilians are living with the tropical paradise underneath that ice sheet. So yeah, it's very interesting stuff. And I mean, we're trying to hit a lot of ancient alien type subjects here. And so let's go move on to the moon. So it's very significant in the role it plays within ancient astronaut theory. The Sumerian and Babylonian mythology describe it being formed in a battle between the gods Marduk and Tiamat, which may actually be, personifications of planets colliding with each other, which is what Zechariah Sitchin explained. And in Greek and Roman mythology, we also find that the moon was put into place by some great cosmic event, and that it is possibly hollow, which was actually an oddity that seemed to be, supported by seismic tests done by NASA during the Apollo.
Lori, I think we lost you again, but yeah, you were saying that this was an oddity, the hollow moon hypothesis that was supported by seismic tests done by NASA during the, I think it was Apollo 11 and possibly Apollo 12. Are you back with us, Lori?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. You were just saying about the hollow moon hypothesis.
Yeah, so yeah, with the hollow moon, like, they did that, but it was actually seemed to be supported by seismic tests that were done by NASA during the Apollo space program. Measurements from those tests suggested that moon rings like a bell when impacted by falling objects. So, Aaron, do you think there could be an alien presence on the moon, or at least physical evidence that there was one at one time?
Yeah, really, really good question. And when we look at Neil Armstrong, for instance, when he allegedly came back from the moon. I mean, I'm not one of these people who said, to think that he never made it, or I hope he did make it. Mm-hmm. I'm leaning towards the fact that he did make it. Don't ask me why I think that, but I think he did make it there. But the point is what he discovered when he made it there. And I think, in fact, I'm 90% sure that Neil Armstrong saw remnants of a lost civilization on the moon. I don't think he's seen living beings on the moon, but I think he's seen evidence of a lost civilization which once was on the moon. And again, when we look at, again, cuneiform tablets and other ancient texts, they refer a lot to the moon and how it was a way station, much like Mars, which was known as Lamu in the ancient world. Tiamat was an unknown planet that allegedly formed the asteroid belt, which they called the Hammered Bracelet. And Alleluia describes how difficult it was flying through the Hammered Bracelet to reach Earth for gold.
I'm glad to say you mentioned, Neil Armstrong, and because I have to say, I've always been perplexed by the Apollo astronauts' lack of visibility, their lack of public presence. Most of them were not very vocal about the lunar missions, about what it was like to be the only humans to ever go to the moon. Last year, my daughter and I watched the Netflix series The Crown, which was about the royal family. And in one episode, Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip invite Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins to Buckingham Palace so they could talk to them personally about their mission. So Prince Philip was a real aviation aficionado. He was a pilot himself, trained by the Royal Air Force, and he was big into technology and engineering, and he was just enthralled with the Apollo program. He just thought that was just the greatest thing. So he arranges to have them go over to England and visit him, he and Queen Elizabeth. And in this episode, Prince Philip sits down with them in one of those, many elegant drawing rooms in Buckingham Palace. And he says to them that he doesn't want to ask any technical questions, and said he wants to hear from them what it was really like going to the moon. He wants to know what it was like spiritually and emotionally, and what were their feeling, and what were they thinking as they looked out into the vastness of space and then touched the soil of the moon, deep stuff like that. He wanted to hear them tell what was going through their minds as they were becoming the first human beings to ever do this. And they gave him nothing. They were like, we didn't even have time to notice or look outside the window. We were too busy monitoring all of our controls and instruments and going over all of our checklists and manuals, the hundreds of operational procedures. But, we remember the water cooler was really noisy, and you can just see Prince Philip is dumbfounded. He's like, what, the water cooler, you tell me you go all the way to the moon and that's what you remember. So Aaron, you find that kind of odd? I mean, I do. And, you find it odd that the guys who actually went to the moon seem to be the ones that have the least to say about it.
Yeah. Well, allegedly, let's go back to when Neil Armstrong got back, in the press conference, it was said to have been a shell of his former self when he came back. He'd become very reclusive. Apparently, I don't know. I never knew him personally, but apparently he was very reclusive. He'd become very introvert, so to speak.
Became very strange after that.
He did indeed, yeah. As I said, I think he's seen more than he bargained for, and NASA obviously cut the feed. It's interesting as well that you mentioned Prince Philip. Prince Philip was very, very into his UFO stuff. He had books, tons and tons of books based on the UFO subject. And that was front page news a couple of weeks ago here in the UK in the Daily Star. The X-Files of Prince Philip. So, I picked up the paper to have a look at it. But yeah, there's a lot of of stuff we don't know about the royal family.
But those guys, the Apollo astronauts, they were always like that. They hardly ever embellished on what it was like for them personally. I'm sure there was a lot more they could have said, and most likely wanted to say.
But there's one thing I want to add about Neil Armstrong. You're probably aware of it, but I don't know if you're aware of the Taos Cave expedition that Eric von Daniken arranged.
I think I've heard about that. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, in Ecuador. So Eric von Daniken was
the ones who passed away, of course. It makes you wonder if they.
Hey, Lori, we lost your connection there. We were kind of talking about Neil Armstrong and his. He had that trip to Ecuador. So, Aaron, if you want to go ahead and continue. Oh,
yeah, no problem. Yeah, no problem, guys. Eric von Daniken was convinced after meeting with Carlos Father Crespi I don't know if you know about Father Crespi and the artifacts that he managed to acquire from the native indigenous people. Carlos Father Crespi was an Italian priest based in, or missionary, should I say, based in Ecuador. And he became more or less a local celebrity, and the local indigenous people, you know, absolutely adored him. And they adorned him with gifts after gifts. And many of these gifts were ancient artifacts that were reminiscent of artifacts from Sumeria, from the Babylonian period. You know, I don't know if you're aware of the Birdmen from...
The Birdmen from Easter Island.
Similar, yeah. We're talking about like the Mesopotamian Birdmen, you know, the Apkallu with the handbags, mysterious handbags. And Father Crespi got many of these artifacts that were absolutely identical to those of Iraq. So straight away, we're told that there wasn't any contact with our ancient ancestors or transoceanic contact. Yet we have artifacts thousands and thousands of miles apart ending up in Ecuador that should have been in Mesopotamia. And, you know, Father Crespi kept all these artifacts locked away, where he was living. And it was Father Crespi, the indigenous people told Father Crespi of this Taos Cave of Gold, a hidden library within the Taos Caves, and you know, nobody could reach them. So Eric von Daniken arranged an exhibition into these caves, and Neil Armstrong went on this exhibition, and he was deeply, deeply into the ancient astronaut hypothesis. And it was said that they never find this lost cave or lost labyrinth of gold, but he did go on this expedition, which is very interesting.
Well, Roy, I think that answers the question you had. Aaron, do you think that the reason that the astronauts acted strange and have this sort of silence is because they came face to face with hard evidence on the moon about aliens, and that's what profoundly, you know, shocked them to their core?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I believe what Neil Armstrong saw on the moon led him onto the expedition in Ecuador and in the Taos Caves, the lost gold of the Taos Caves. I believe he has answers. He has solid answers as to you know, our ancient past and visitors from the stars. I believe Neil Armstrong took those answers to the grave with him. Yeah, I'm convinced.
So, Aaron, what about the other abundant stories of UFOs, you know, like the ones such as Roswell, Phoenix Lights, Rendlesham Forest, the Tic Tac video footage, the Travis mm-hmm. Walton abduction here in Arizona, the Barney and Biddy Hill, Missing Time, et cetera. Do you think these accounts serve as legitimate evidence for alien contact, Aaron, or are they more likely anomalies related to psychological phenomena?
Yeah, it's interesting. I read a book called Light Quest by a really great British author by the name of Andrew Collins. You might be aware of his work. He not long ago released a book called something by the Denisovans, the Lost Denisovans. I can't remember the actual name now. Forgive me, and probably listen. But I read a book by him called Light Quest. And he speaks of, similar to what Jacques Vallée says, that, you know, the orbs that are seen are very much paranormal as opposed to physical objects, so to speak. I believe the Travis Walton incident is one of the most credible cases that we've ever seen. Along with Roswell, I mean, you know, of course Roswell happened, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that Roswell happened, and then they did recover a flying saucer.
Yeah.
You know, it's even on the front page of the newspaper the next day until they, you know, said it was a weather balloon, which, you know, if you believe that, and I think you got rocks in your head, right? So yeah, there's, and like the Rendlesham Forest incident, I mean, you know, there's too much evidence. We got, you know, Air Force officials speaking about, you know, their experiences, you know, that they're very credible people who've got a lot to lose
So do you think the governments of the world know more about UFOs and aliens than they claim?
Absolutely. Of course they do. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you obviously know about Bob Lazar and Los Alamos.
Yeah, there's so many different stories. I mean, there's just story after story. Yeah, we actually talked about Bob Lazar in a few of our episodes. So yeah, and like you said, these are credible people. These are people who are not loons. They're not, you know, they are scientists and they are military officials.
Yeah, and there's something that might make you guys real happy. I attended the Awakening Conference, as I said, in June in Blackpool, and Richard Doty was one of the speakers there. And he got out of the car and I went up to him, and it was just one burning question that I had for him. And I've delved heavily into the story of Serpo, the secret journey to planet Serpo. I don't know if you've read the book by Len Kasdan. And I spoke to Richard Doty, who was an Air Force intelligence, officer. And I came out blank with it, came out blank with the question, did Serpo happen? And his answer was, absolutely, it did happen. He said, I know it happened. And he said, whether it was three people or 12 people that went, I cannot answer. But he said, I can tell you that it happened. And that's coming from Richard Doty.
Yeah, so these I'm more skeptical than these people, and I think they have better credentials than me, but it's a fascinating subject, right, Ori?
Yeah, it truly more than just one subject. They're all fascinating, and it's a pretty broad spectrum of subjects covering science, history, philosophy, and religion. And I would say it is a necessary subject to discuss because there is so much that we still do not know about it. So I think it's important to talk about it, as well as to welcome skeptical thinking, as that is how to better analyze and study and learn about these various pertinent topics about aliens and UFOs, both from cases in the past and in the present day. Do you agree, Aaron?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, when we look at the broad spectrum of it, it's the biggest news story to ever grace planet Earth. It is the biggest story. If it came out on the mainstream news all over the world tomorrow, it would be the biggest story to ever be aired.
It would change everything we know about ourselves, about our history, and our governments and everything. Yes, it would change. It would turn the world upside down. And whether you concur with these myriad of hypotheses or not, one thing that is for certain is that they are worthy of serious debate and discussion. And I think more people are willing to at least entertain that notion, not necessarily believe it. There are a lot of people who don't believe it and are very skeptical, and they just simply don't want it. But at least to intellectually consider the possibility that there are facts, some yet to be uncovered, that may challenge what we know so far. That is the very essence of learning, what we call curiosity. So that is going to wrap it up for today. And we want to thank you all once again for tuning into the program. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did with our very enlightening discussion here with filmmaker Aaron Long.
Yeah, Aaron, we truly want to thank you for taking the time to be on the show with us today. And, we hope to have you back on again, and hopefully we want to have some connection issues fixed. But it was a real pleasure to share all these topics with you and to hear about your own research and your insight into all of it. So, thanks for a great episode.
Yeah, real quick, guys. I just want to just clear a few things up. So I just want to put a big thanks out to Graham Mum, who lives in Los Angeles, California. It was him that took me on for the ancient astronaut theory and to post for him. So, originally it was his page, and he took me on and he gave me free rein on the page. I did have a small Facebook page called The Way Home, which was based on the ancient astronaut theory. He liked my work after I messaged him, and he said, let's see what you can do on this page. And I've been posting ever since. So I want to give a big shout out to Graham and a big congrats to him and Brianna with their newborn as well. I feel truly blessed, and I wouldn't have had this opportunity if it weren't for Graham. So thank you, Graham.
And for certain. Yes, thank you, Aaron. Thanks for staying up late with us. I know there's a big time difference between Arizona and England. And I appreciate you staying up late to have this discussion with us. And it was a real honor to be able to talk with you and to have the opportunity for you to share all your knowledge with all of our audience. So, hey, real quick, once again, tell everyone your social media information so they can follow you if they don't already follow you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, obviously, I'm on Facebook. I'm not, just to clear up as well, I'm not a filmmaker. I'm actually an actor. So, you know, I did The Last Raid back in 2012. I've literally just finished filming for Reboot, which, you know, lucky enough to get the lead role in. Fantastic director John Wheeler is already won 6 awards. It's going, you know, been selected at many, many festivals. Should be released mid next year to late next year. So yeah, you know, keep an eye out for Reboot. Reboot is coming out. I have wrote articles as well for Phenomena magazine. So, you know, check them out. Spacemen Lost to Time, which focus on the Tassili paintings in Algiers of, you know, what we could best be known as, you know, ancient astronauts. But I wanted to, you know, say a big, big thank you to you, Laurie and Joe. It's been a true pleasure being on here, and I've very much enjoyed our conversation, and it was a truly, like I said, truly an honor to be on with you guys, and I'm truly thankful and privileged.
Most excellent. The honor was all ours. And so, folks, don't forget to follow us on our Facebook page and send us any questions, comments, or suggestions. We would love to hear your thoughts and about aliens, UFOs, about the mysterious and the paranormal, you know, just about anything. So for next episode in 2 weeks, we'll talk about the extraterrestrial aspects found within apocalyptic visions, particularly in the scriptures from the books of Ezekiel, Daniel, and Revelation. Very interesting pieces of literature. So until then, as always, stay curious.
Yeah, that's right. And Zachariah Sitchin himself wrote a lot about what he called the end of days in his interpretation of the Sumerian myth about the Anunnaki and the planet Nibiru. This goes along with many other ancient predictions and prophecies about the apocalypse. So it should be very interesting, maybe even a little bit unsettling, given the state of the world today. So be sure to tune in for that starting on November 20th. Also check us out on patreon.com. We always appreciate your continued.
And I think we lost Ori again, but he was saying we appreciate your continued support for the program. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We look forward to being with you again next time right here on Alien Talk Podcast. Bye, everyone.